Today on Family Talk.
The prophet Daniel lived under the tyrannical and immoral rule of King Nebuchadnezzar. Despite the wickedness that surrounded him, though, Daniel never compromised his faith in God or bowed to cultural pressures, and that should be an inspiration to all believers living here in the 21st century. You're listening to Family Talk, a ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, filling in for your host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. I ask that you keep him and Mrs. Dobson in your prayers as they continue to do the Lord's work. Well, today we have a fascinating new interview featuring New York Times bestselling author and radio personality Eric Metaxas. He recently sat down with our Dr. Tim Clinton to comment on the current climate of this society. They will identify the obscene material that exists online and the vulgarity that has infected our political system. The two men will also discuss the power of words and why so many believers don't openly engage in culture anymore. There's a lot of content to get to, so let's get started. Here now is Dr. Tim Clinton with author Eric Metaxas on this edition of Family Talk.
Eric, thanks for stopping by. It's always an honor to have you.
Thank you.
Hey, your radio program is doing very well. You're now on television. You're on TBN. I know when people think of you, Eric, they often go back to your writing. Bonhoeffer, yeah. Wilberforce, more recent one, Luther and more. Eric, yeah. Why? Why did you go back in there? And what have those books done to you personally?
Well, they helped me pay the rent, which is why the only
Love
reason
that.
I wrote them.
Yeah, that helps.
Because I don't care about the other side of it. It's just, it's a moneymaker. You know what I'm saying, Tim?
No, honestly,
it's kind of funny because I can be very honest and say that, you know, if you had talked to me 15 years ago and said, Eric, do you ever think you'll write biographies in your life ever? I would have said to you straight up, no. I mean, I always wanted to be a writer, and I had an ambition to write in all kinds of genres. Biography was never one of those genres, but the Lord did it. And, you know, a lot of times people say that. I can tell you, seriously, the Lord did it. I mean, I was asked to write the biography on William Wilberforce. I was asked, and I was like, what? Like a biography? And I prayed about it, and I can tell you that the Lord spoke to me in a vision while I was praying and made it clear that he wanted me to do this. And if people don't believe the Lord speaks in visions, they're wrong. And so I wrote that book on Wilberforce. And as I was talking about Wilberforce and how this incredible Christian man, led the battle to end slavery, more and more it dawned on me why the Lord wanted me to write this book. Because these are stories we need to know. First of all, we need to know our history so that we have some sense of where we are historically. But secondly, we need heroes. And this is something that I didn't set out to write biographies for that. But in retrospect, I realized that the story of Bonhoeffer, the story of Luther, I wrote a book called Seven Men, which is seven short biographies, and a book called Seven Women, which is seven short biographies. And I have a new book coming out called Seven More Men, which is seven biographies. And I realized that we need desperately to have heroes that we can look up to and say, that's an amazing life. I want to be like that. Because we live in a culture that is sort of anti-heroic. Since the 60s, we've had the anti-heroes, and we no longer feel comfortable saying, like, you know, that's a person of great virtue. We don't talk about that stuff. So in the stories, you're able to communicate something really beautiful, a human being who was used in a way that changed lives and whatever. Then when you read the story, you kind of want to be like that. You say, I want to live a life like that. So honestly, Tim, I had no idea ever that I would do this. But, you know, as everybody says, God has different ideas. So,
Eric, you're on the front lines of culture. You're in there warring. You're on CNN with Don Lemon, and you're showing up on Fox, etc. But what are you thinking about culture right now? I mean, middle of the night, wake up. Where's your mind?
Well, I'll tell you what. If I didn't believe in Jesus,
it's
I would be in
there.
Tremendous despair. The culture is extraordinarily vulgar. Now, the president has not exactly helped, but I can tell you without any question, his detractors have been infinitely worse. Not long ago, when one of the Koch brothers died, Bill Maher said something really despicable about him, like hours after his death was announced, and then said, F him. And I thought, can you imagine if Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies and a couple hours later somebody says, F her. Anybody knows that it is wrong to say that kind of stuff. But the left has given itself permission to do that. They've given themselves permission to hate. And they pretend that the president is divisive. I actually would say, and I say this having really considered the subject, because I take this stuff seriously, that they have decided that it's okay to be spewing hate because they actually believe that he's doing that or that the people who've supported him are full of hate. So if you really have convinced yourself of that, you say, hey, the gloves are off and I'm just going to do anything I can. But what it does is terrible. But you know, Tim, this is nothing new. This is, we've been drifting in this direction really since the 60s. There's no question that the culture has become more and more vulgar. You and I know Jesus is the answer, and we know that God can do anything. So I believe that there will be revival in America. I believe that we're going to see things that it has to be God. In the natural, it does not look good.
Media and the arts. Everybody's saying the war is in that place, right?
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Whoever wins that wins.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And you're seeing the gloves come off like crazy, especially in social media.
Oh, it's gross. It's ugly. Listen, social media, it has created something that is akin to the French Revolution mob, right? In other words, you have a mob that can attack people, that can say the most vicious things with no consequences, effectively no consequences. And it's just something that we didn't really have that ability before social media. I mean, we had the ability to have actual mobs and their lynchings and that kind of stuff. But I'm saying that the government could step in. You could have, you know, somehow this is a new thing. And, you know, what's called virtue signaling. I sometimes think that Twitter is used for nothing else but vitriol and virtue signaling, saying vicious things or denouncing things that you claim are vicious, you know, to show that you're part of the right side of things by denouncing this. It's just, you know.
Some would say it's terroristic. In a lot of ways, if you disagree with someone, I mean, you see these people gang
up
and go after someone and want to destroy them.
Yeah.
I mean, the goal is to silence you, to shame you, to give you a stigma.
Right.
I mean, to paint you into a corner.
Right.
I don't care if 99% of your life's great. If that thing right there is something you don't agree with,
can I tell you what?
They're going to kill you.
That is exactly why this president is like no one I have ever seen. I have never seen anyone able to withstand the criticism beyond that, to utterly ignore it and keep going. I think that that is an extraordinary virtue. It's something that is just sometimes breathtaking to me, that he has the ability to say, I'm not going to play your game. I will never play your game. For all of his faults, that is an extraordinary virtue. And I think that we need more leaders who have that kind of ability to rise above the childish voices. What it makes me think of is when Jesus said, you know, you're like, the people of this generation are like the children in the marketplace. You know, we played the pipe for you and you did not dance. We played a dirge for you and you did not mourn. No matter what you do, there's a negativity, there's a complaining. That is basically where we are. And we have to have men and women of God who know who they are and who are willing to take the slings and arrows, because, you know, it's like sticks and stones may break my bones. They're kind of meaningless, but if you let it affect you, it'll affect you.
Is that where it's going, though, Eric? I mean, to a place where people are afraid to post. They're afraid to post what they feel about things politically, or they're afraid to say something that may be a little out of line or something. Wait a second, that's not right.
Yeah.
They're afraid. They're silenced.
One of the reasons the Bonhoeffer book is something that I believe the Lord gave me to write, and it wasn't like a bright idea that I had, is because there's so many parallels to today. Bonhoeffer was a brave voice willing to speak up at a time when everybody was saying, you know what, I don't want to lose my job. I don't want people to look at me funny. I'm going to shut up. If you shut up, you become part of the problem. And you think you can kind of get out of it by saying, well, but I didn't say anything. But that's the point. God calls us to speak the truth. I mean, the idea, for example, that I'm supposed to call Bruce Jenner Caitlyn and say he's a woman, it's a wonderful thing. In the United States of America, which is a free country, I don't think the government can force me to do that, right? I love this man since I was a kid. I looked up to him as an idol and stuff. But the idea that people are going to say, okay, like, reality's changed and you need to jump through the hoop now jump through the hoop, it's Caitlin, blah, 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 blah. I think to myself, really? No, I want most Americans to understand that even though I'm going to be judicious, I'm going to be kind, I'm going to pray for people, I'm going to have sympathy and empathy, but I'm not going to do it because you tell me I must do it. I'm not. When somebody says, okay, I have a bakery, and you come in here, you want me to bake a Halloween cake, I'm not going to do it. I'm a Christian. The government can't force me to do it, and the government should never, ever, 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 ever force anybody to do something like that. The government is now forcing people to do that. If we Christians don't stand up against this, we are absolutely to blame. And I'll tell you, Tim, there are plenty of Christians who do not understand this issue, and they actually seem to say that, I mean, it's almost like they drank the social justice PC Kool-Aid, and they don't understand that there is a time to fight.
Or they're getting lost on an issue, you know that? And they won't even come back. It's like crying about X over here when you've got a dumpster full of babies over here.
Well, I mean, this is the whole thing, too, like the fake cries of racism. It's like, have you ever seen actual racism? I mean, if you've actually seen real racism, the idea that you would label all these people racist, I mean, if I wanted to, I could label the Democrats racist because their policies are harming blacks and harming minorities. Now, I know that to be true, but I don't say they're racist. I just say that their policies are harming people.
It's like destroying a word, too.
Well, but that's the point. It's like all these words have been destroyed. There's a sanctity to words. Animals cannot speak. We have this ability to communicate, and it is just vital that we use our words carefully. But, and I'm a writer, so I take this very seriously, but when you devalue words like racism, hatred, or blah, 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 it's not just bad for the people you're hurting with your words. It's bad for everybody because all we have is words. And once we lose words, you know, it gets a little tough.
You're listening to Dr. James Dobson Family Talk. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton. In studio guest, Eric Metaxas. Incredible voice and mind in modern-day Christianity. It's a pleasure to have him here in the studio with us. Eric, censoring. You hear a lot about people saying that they're going to censor Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. They're going to suppress it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's true?
Oh, there's no question it's happening. There is no question, and it's utterly despicable. Listen, in the United States of America, people should be tipping over cars with anger over this stuff. The media today are complicit with destructive forces, politically correct liberal forces. What they really are, they're cultural Marxists, okay? There's no question. There's simply no question about this. And they have become increasingly loud and increasingly out of the closet in terms of saying what they think. And they are not doing their job. We had, you know, the Fifth Estate is supposed to report on the news and tell the truth. So when Google is suppressing conservative results, when Facebook and Twitter and on and on and on are doing that, it is fundamentally un-American. Everybody who is fair-minded should say, hey, this is wrong. But we're in a place, it's a new place, where they're not doing it. And so we're going to have to find other means. This program is one of them, to say to people, you should never let this stand. If you allow this stuff to stand, if you allow people to bully your daughter in school, that there's going to be a transgender athlete who's going to kick her butt on the track, oh, and it's a guy who says he's a woman. This is happening in Connecticut. If fathers, especially, do not stand up and raise holy heck and go into the principal and say, listen, I will not allow this, and you're going to get more trouble from me than you ever, because the idea that we're sort of like caught in this thing, I want everybody to like me, that is fundamentally unhealthy, and ultimately it's cowardly.
Hmm. Eric, the issue is coming up in the election cycle. Some people are saying it's health care, others VA benefits, quality education, trade acts, opioid, dealing with a crisis, jobs, jobs, jobs. For Christians, what do you think the big issues are? What's going to surface that's going to make or break how I'm going to pull the lever?
The simplest thing for me is we've been in danger for not a long time, but for some time, of losing the whole kit and caboodle, losing the republic. We had something that the founders created. They were geniuses, but I also believe that they had divine revelation. In other words, this is not something that just people did. God's hand was in the creation of the freest country in the history of the world, which made us the most wealthy and most good country in the history of the world, with all our flaws. I believe God's hand was in that. And that can, you know, I could trace it all the way back to Luther, in a sense, that the gospel leads to this kind of freedom and so on and so forth. But the point is, ultimately, you have to keep it, right? The title of one of my books is If You Can Keep It. If you don't keep the republic, it goes away forever. It's not like, oh, well, we lost this election, whatever. At some point, you know, just like you can spend yourself into debt where you're never going to get back at some point, right? I really believe that the Christians that I have talked to who say, oh, I'm not going to vote because I don't like this president or he's vulgar or something, I think, listen, God's going to hold you accountable because we're talking about policies here. This whole country, we will lose our ability to be self-governing. We'll lose our ability to be free. Be very, very careful and understand what is at stake. When you vote for somebody, it doesn't mean you vote for everything about them, okay? I don't have to like, you know, the president's hair. I don't like have to like the way he tweets. I don't have to. That's not the issue. He's going to do things in policies that are going to affect children, that are going to affect generations to come. You need to take that seriously. You have a vote, and, you know, he's not going to be president for life. If he's elected, he gets 4 years. But the issue is that he has had the ability, and this is really the point, to understand the fundamentals. Like, for example, that the Supreme Court needs to be populated by people who have deep respect for the Constitution,
sure,
for the founders' view, for an originalist view. If you lose that, it's game over for America. I mean, that sounds draconian, it sounds hyperbolic. Unfortunately, it's not. And I actually say that if you care about minorities, you have to care about these issues. It's
so,
one thing
so,
to talk
so
about.
So do you
it.
Think it's apathy? Do you think it's silenced? What is it that Joey in Clearfield County, Pennsylvania, has just basically like numbed out or something on this stuff? I mean, he's hearing Christian leaders say this is important, and he considers himself a Christian. But why can't he hear it?
Well, look, you get some really bad theology. I've talked to some people that are convinced that being a Christian means that, oh, I don't want to get into that nasty political fray. I just want to preach the gospel. I don't want to vote for somebody who's ungodly or whatever. I hate to say it, but that's simple ignorance. That's ignorance of Scripture, and it's ignorance of our form of government. You have a responsibility to vote for someone who is going to do the best job. And here's the issue. If you don't, if you sit on your rear end and say, I am not going to vote, it means that someone is going to win and you're going to be on the hook. You're going to be responsible for whoever wins because you didn't vote, you know? So if somebody else wins, let's say, you can't say, oh, I didn't have any part in that. The fact is that if you do not choose it, if you don't go in there and take this vote seriously, that people died so that you could choose, you are doing a disservice to the whole country. You cannot pretend that there's three options, to vote for this one, or to not vote. If you don't vote, somebody's going to get elected, and you're responsible because you didn't vote for the other guy. And Eric, I just want to say that that is bad theology.
Eric, I want to take it a step further. You have people out there who think this is the great evangelical sellout. You guys compromised it all.
Yeah.
I mean, you're throwing it right down the tube. Yeah. Shame on you.
Yeah.
You're an embarrassment to all of us. You're not of the Lord.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, I fundamentally disagree with those folks. I understand where they're coming from, but I'm stunned at their level of historical ignorance. For example, I wrote a 600-page book on Dietrich Bonhoeffer and the fascists and the Nazis and that whole thing. And people say, like, I can't believe somebody wrote this book, doesn't understand. Like, they read my book and they know more about it than I do because they read the book, you know? And I'm thinking, you're missing something. Here's the issue. The voices that are being silenced in America today by fascist elements, people behaving like fascists. For example, the Antifa are behaving like fascists, and a lot of the politically correct people, a lot of the leftist mob, they behave like fascists in the sense that they can't win the argument, so they want to shut you down by force, by threats of force or by force. And so if you don't recognize a parallel with the Nazis in that. Now, maybe the parallel breaks down eventually, but at the same time, if you don't understand that it is your job to side with the people who say, no, we believe in free speech, we believe in being able to, you know, argue and have conversations and respect each other, whatever, to my mind, there's no question that the left has said the gloves are off, we're going to win it at all costs. We don't care if we have to manipulate algorithms at Google and pretend that we're fair. We're going to do anything that we have to do. I mean, look, Tim, you and I can't force people to see certain things, but I do see those parallels. I think it's chilling. I believe that God will prevail. I believe that God's hand is on this nation. I believe that there's a holy remnant of people praying. They're like prophetic prayer warriors in this country. And I really believe that, that God will prevail. But the idea that people would say that I, because I advocated for this president, suddenly threw out everything that I care about for power. I mean, that's just such ridiculous.
What is your prayer, Eric, for America, really? I mean, as you look down the road and you look at your children, your grandchildren, whatever, I mean, think about it.
Well, the number one thing.
What are you praying God will do?
I will tell you, the number one thing is revival. If we have revival in America, you will see changes that we can't even imagine. So that is absolutely number one. But I would say that just like in Wilberforce's day, politics does matter. You know, if somebody doesn't believe politics doesn't matter, why don't you move to North Korea? You say Jesus or you read a Bible, you'll be tortured. So you're going to tell me I don't care about politics? The fundamental issue is Jesus. Let's not lose sight of that, okay? It's not about politics. But when Christians believe that somehow their faith gives them the ability to step away from politics, I say, if I was a slave in 1850, okay, and you're a Christian, and you're telling me you're not going to use your vote and your political voice to end slavery because you don't want to be unpopular with the pro-slavery people because you might lose your witness with the pro-slavery people, I will simply say, shame on you. God will judge you. At some point, you're going to see what you have done did not glorify God. And I think there are people that are so worried about their witness that they don't care about truth. They don't care about right. They don't care about wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, we have to care about the poorest of the poor, the least of these. If I care about, I mean, let's look at like something like unemployment, right? This president's policies have brought unemployment among blacks to an historic low. Now, how do you blow that off and say, like, you know what, I don't care? You don't care? You don't care about people having jobs? If you actually care about people, you need to at least take that seriously. Maybe you're not going to vote for him, but you need to say, you know what, he's done some amazing things. He's given some people some opportunities. But there are people that they're so ideologically crippled, they just cannot get past whatever
Supreme
it is.
Supreme Court appointments, federal judges, so much more. Eric, we're out of time. This has been fun. I'm sure it's going to light things up. Let me give you a closing opportunity here. Speak to me. I'm out there. I'm kind of discouraged. I'm fearful, but at the same time, I'm hopeful. And I'm hearing people say my voice matters now more than ever.
Well, I will say fundamentally, in my heart of hearts, in my discernment from the Lord, I believe that this president will be reelected. I believe that God has his hand on this president and is using this president. He doesn't have to be a modern day Cyrus for us to understand that God often uses people that we wouldn't have picked. Okay. Nobody would have picked Jesus, by the way. Nobody would have picked Jesus. They thought, this guy can't be the Messiah. He's a loser. He's from Nazareth. He's from, I mean, are you kidding me? And he's saying all these disturbing things. God's pattern is always to upset the apple cart and whatever. And I think we're going through a time like that. I think it's incumbent on Christians to pray and pray and pray for this president, pray and fast for this nation. I would actually say boldly, I think we're on the verge of revival. I think we're on the verge of a new birth of liberty, to go back to Lincoln. And by the way, nobody understood everything we're talking about better than Abraham Lincoln. In my book, If You Can Keep It, I wrote a chapter on Lincoln, and I thought if people would really look at him today, nobody understood. He had a love for the founders and for the American experiment like no one ever has. He got it on a level that God was able to use him because of that. And I think that we're in a similar moment right now where the people of God, we have to get it. We have to love our country and pray, not for us, but for the whole world and for generations to come. So I'll be honest, I'm very hopeful from the Lord. I just think that good things are ahead. We just need to hold firm, but God is, his hand is on the nation.
I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to an insightful edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Our host today has been Dr. Tim Clinton, alongside his guest, author and radio broadcaster, Eric Metaxas. Learn more about Eric's many books that were discussed on today's program when you go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Simply go to drjamesdobson.org and then click onto the broadcast icon at the top of the page. Now, before we leave for the day, I want to tell you about our matching grant that's going on right now. A few weeks ago, a generous friend of our ministry blessed us with a gift of $325,000. That means that every donation we receive will be doubled for greater impact. Now, this match won't last long, so consider making a contribution to the ministry and mission of Family Talk today. For more information on how to do so, go to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or call 877-732-6825, and a member of our staff will be happy to tell you how to give. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.